Hey, everybody. Before we get to my guest, very, very cool guest that I'm excited to talk to. I just wanted to remind you about my one-man show, Permission to Speak with Paul Mercurio on Broadway at the Jerry Orbach Theater at Broadway and 50th Street. Go to Ticketmaster.com for tickets. Tonight is our opening night. It was supposed to be a week ago, but a few hours before showtime, a guy decided to wander into a stairwell and light a fire. Yeah, small fire, but we had to cancel shows for the week. Apparently, I guess he had seen me perform before and decided the world didn't need to see me anymore. I don't know. I don't know what it was about, but theater's safe, all good. We're back up and running tonight, Monday, going through August 22nd. It's a limited run. Go to Ticketmaster.com, put in the code PM, as in Mary, PM fan, all one word, and get a discount on the tickets because you're listening to this podcast, all right? So hope you can make it out. Had a rough week. Could really use the support. Permission to Speak with Paul Mercurio, Ticketmaster. It's an audience interactive show. Audiences tell, members tell stories. We hang out. Just come and listen. You don't have to participate if you don't want. It's a unique improv show. I think you're really going to like it. Been getting great feedback from the previews that we did. So hope you can make it out and enjoy Omar Epps. Really great actor. I've seen him in House and Juice, Higher Learning, ER. It's really got a great book out about fatherhood. So enjoy this conversation with Omar Epps, great actor, and hope to see you at my show, Permission to Speak. Hey, everybody, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us. My guest today from the movies Juice, Higher Learning, The Wood, Into Deep, Love and Basketball, great shows, ER, House, Omar Epps is with us. He has the Blu-ray of Traffic is out right now, and he has a great book out, From Fatherless to Fatherhood. Hey, nice having you on the show, man.
Nice to be on. How you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. You are Brooklyn native. Are you based in New York these days? Are you based in L.A., or you keep roots in both places?
Yeah, I keep roots in both places, but mostly in L.A. I'm working out there right now. We're on season three of Shooter on USA Network, so.
Cool. I was really taken by your book. I'm a dad myself, and I know you grew up without a dad, an only child.
Right.
By the way, we have a son, and he's going to be an only child. So how is that being an only? Do you feel like was that hard? Like, did you feel like you missed anything by not having siblings or anything like that?
No, not really. I had a great bunch of friends, and you know, for me it was cool because I got all the attention from my mom.
Yeah, that doesn't suck, right? That's pretty good. Yeah, our kid definitely. We do find, and I don't know if maybe because we're raising him in New York too, I think a combination of that and being an only child, I think you kind of tend to be a little bit more mature earlier, you know?
Yeah.
Because you don't have the sibling rivalry and stuff like that, I think.
Yeah, you kind of got to learn to be self-sufficient. I mean, certainly growing up in New York, you know, they used to use that term latchkey kid. When I was a latchkey kid, you know, my mom, she was educated. So I had to, you know, learn the train system at a young age, learn the bus system. And with that comes a certain amount of responsibility at a young age.
Yeah, exactly. You know, run around till midnight, do whatever you want. Just make sure you're home in bed by 2, something like that. You know, it's just kind of,
I wish.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you said, regarding the book that it was written anyway, that fatherhood is about much more than providing food and shelter for a child. It's about much more than cutting a check to check a box. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, it's about, you know, fatherhood. I think, you know, for whatever reason, it's been generations, but, you know, men are just sort of looked at as the workhorses and in a traditional sense, you know, you provide food, clothes and shelter, but real parenthood is about being active and being present.
Right.
You know, because the most valuable thing on earth is time, and that's really all kids remember is the time you spent with them.
Right.
I just think, you know, there's a lot of working households. Certainly, the family structure has been fluid. So I'm just speaking from my point of view. I'm not speaking for other points of views, but. You know, it's still pretty much in general, you know, a lot of professional, you know, men, it's just like you're handling all that and they detach from the other parts of fatherhood.
Yeah, you know, you make a good point, and I don't think it's that those parents, those dads in particular, want to be absentee parents in some way emotionally or whatever, but like my dad, you know, blue-collar guy, first-generation American, we're Italian descent, he worked. Like, he was putting floors in for a living all day, and then he was also working in our little furniture store. And right. I had nothing left at the end of the week. Like, he'd take me out on Sunday. We'd do, like, a little bit of something. But, like, he was there, but, like, he was working so much. And he also, that generation, they didn't really, especially the guys, didn't, like, emote a lot. You know what I mean?
Right, sort of, right.
And so I feel like if anything was missing from me, it was sort of having a bigger connection with my dad. Like, the most connection I would have with him is if I went to work with him. Like, I'd go and help him put floors in and stuff, and I was at least hanging out with my dad, you know?
Right, right. And you know, to your point, I mean, that's a great, great point. And, you know, there was that generational, you know, from your dad's age group. And some of those things still exist. I think there's a generational thing. I think there's a cultural thing, but, you know, all in all, you know, we're at a time where I think men are needed in the ways that we can be when it comes to parenthood. I know a lot of great fathers, and it's about being active. You know, mm-hmm. It's about being active. And you find the time. I mean, even in what I do for a profession, it's you know, I'm not punching in the clock 9 to 5. So
yeah,
I might, you know, be up and gone for 2-3 months, you know, and that you never know when that's going to happen. So for me, it's just about trying as hard as I can to be active. And you just find the ways. It's an ebb and flow. But, you know, the kids, remember those moments. They really
oh,
do.
Yeah. I mean, how old are your kids now?
I got a 19, 14, and 10-year-old.
All right. Well, yeah, my kid's 15, and I can tell you the number of times, because I do stand-up, so I'm on the road on the weekends and stuff. And he's got baseball's a sport. He's got a baseball game on Sunday, and I go from the airport right to the game with my suitcases, and people right. are looking at me like, what are you, homeless? I'm like, no, man, I'm exhausted, honestly. Like, I literally got an hour of sleep, but this game's only going to happen once, and it ain't coming around again. So not that I'm a hero, but, like, it's what I'm supposed to do. And you're right, like, it's one thing for him to tell you about the double that he hit. It's another thing for you to see him hit the double, you know.
For him and for you. And I just think, you know, 10 years from now, you know, 15, 20 years from now, trust me, like, he's gonna tell you about certain moments where you were exactly that, exhausted, drained, and but you showed up.
Yeah.
And how much that meant to him, you know?
Yeah. You also talk about, like, breaking the cycle of fatherlessness, which, you know, you had, and obviously it's in the African-American community seems to be kind of a big issue still. Like, did you feel that was one of the purposes of writing the book, was to kind of have a bigger message out there, as well as, like, convey your own story?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to that point, I really wanted to use my story as a tool of inspiration. I mean, we, you know, within the African American community, it's we've made many strides when it comes to the issue of fatherhood, but we got a long way to go.
Yeah.
And, you know, I got to tell you, it's been really it's been profound when I've been out there talking about my story and talking about the book, how many people from different walks of life, I mean, doesn't matter the age, the race, the, you know, when it comes to the issue, it's affected so many people. So it's really a universal thing. And, you know, but specifically within African-American community, and I touched on some of these points in the book, like, you know, where, you know, our, problem with that sort of derived from, mm-hmm. but where we're at now, it's like, I just want to help change the narrative. I want it to be a cool thing, you know, when guys are sitting around in the barbershop, you know, and you know, just talking junk. If we know our friend is not handling his responsibilities as a father, then guess what? You're lame. You're not.
Yeah. Why do you think it's such a prevalent problem with African American men? You are one, and you're obviously sensitive to it. Like, I'm just curious, like, why is that?
I mean, that's a very, very there's so many layers to the answer to that.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
I mean, it truthfully does begin from slavery, just in terms of, you know, us being ripped apart from our family.
Yeah.
I mean, families, if you think about it, families were ripped apart, and men were sold, and women were sold, and children were sold. And I think in the construct of American society as things progressed, you know, we kind of were always at the bottom of the totem pole and so forth. And each generation had their own incarnation of that. But from where I come from, you know, I'm a 70s kid, you know, by that time you're coming out of Vietnam, you're coming out of war, you know, a lot of guys that, you know, they're jobless, they're, you know, you have that whole thing happening as well as, you know, the activism in civil rights, you're coming out of that movement where just black people as a whole are sort of getting over a hump that I feel has obviously led us to this point. But I'm saying that to say now you have a lot of young African-American men, you know, making a decent living for themselves and that sort of thing. So you've seen this progress. And I'm not saying it just comes from financial, but just in terms of seeing that you hear a lot of people talking about take back the community, right? We can't take back the community without first having to take back our families.
Huh. So, that's great. That's a really great point. You know, it's funny because, like, being Italian, one of these stereotypes you see in, like, mafia movies, like, you know, the guy's always got a guma, you know, a woman on the side and whatever. But that's kind of true. And I don't know what it is about Italian. Like, my father didn't have it. But, like, it's kind of like a – and it's the kind of view, like, yeah, it's not a big deal. You know, it's like a – you know, there's like this, even my cousin, I got a cousin who runs numbers and he sells stuff out of the trunk of his car. I grew up in Rhode Island, up in New England. But right. It's like not a bad thing. Hey, it's Bobby. You know, he just, some stuff fell off the truck. It's this weird kind of, I think it's a cultural, ethnic thing within the Italian community. Like, I think I almost feel like every ethnicity or race has some sort of slightly off thing going on, you know what I mean? And
it's hard to
explain why, but it is, you know.
But you know what? You know, when you're talking about America, that's what the conversation is. When you know, not saying that every culture doesn't have these afflictions in their own homeland, you know, but like, you know, you're an Italian American of your father's descent, you know, in America at that time, it's like, man, you're scraping to get by. And people were close knit. So there still was that sense of, you know, the family, the cultural thing, you know, they people looked out for one another and that sort of thing. Whereas, you know, for me, you know, being an African-American man, we kind of were ripped from our homeland and, you know, we go back there and we're, you know what I mean? It's like, you're kind of not one of us, but, you know, it's sort of like we're in this gray area.
Yeah, exactly. And I think life lives in the gray area. I'm actually doing a one-man show right now on Broadway, and that's one of the themes of the show is, like, you know, we need to connect more by talking and to each other and, you know, kind of, you know, that where it's not, life's not black and white. I think we're overly politically correct at times, and, like, life, and I say life lives in the gray areas, you know. People are bizarre, interesting, we're imperfect, but in all of that imperfection, there's, like, really great stuff that comes out of that, you know, and...
You're absolutely right, and I was going to say, you know, that's why I love the fact that I'm New York born and raised, because it really is a microcosm of the world. It's just so many different... Every culture you could think of is here. Every food you could think of is here.
Yeah.
And everyone is squished together, and so people are forced to deal with one another. But the beauty in that is you learn to respect other ways of life, other points of view, and you even learn to appreciate different ways of life. Like, you know, I remember when I was really young, lived in Flatbush, I live right next door to a Hasidic synagogue, right? So it was just like, I mean, you know, and you kind of learn the culture. I remember one of my friends around the corner, his grandmother was a Holocaust survivor. She still had the bars on her. And so she would tell me stories, and I'm talking about when I'm like 7-8 years old. So at that young, just like, wow, you know, and then go over to, you know, play ball in Prospect Park. I had my Italian friends. I had my Greek friends. I had my, you know, Middle Eastern friends. And so you just, it's really, in that way, it's sort of an idealistic picture of what our world could be, you know?
Yeah, and also what America truly is, which is supposed to be a melting pot, and that's like a microcosm of it right there, just within a couple of blocks of your house. Like, that's the way it should be. Was it hard for you to write the book because of, like, you know, as you start to think about, I would imagine, things that you missed not having your dad around? Was it difficult at all to kind of put that, not necessarily tell the stories about missing your dad, but just did it conjure up some difficult thoughts for you?
To be honest, it wasn't difficult in that way. The hardest part for me was like the details. Like if I asked you to tell me about your life, unknowingly you're going to give me the cliff notes, right?
Right.
Because you know you so well.
Right.
So, you know, it's those details and subtleties that was kind of, that was challenging for me because I had to, you know, I'm talking to someone I don't know. And I purposely wrote it in a way where hopefully it feels more like a conversation. Like, you know, we're going to Brooklyn, you're going to hop in a car and I'm just going to drive around and tell you about myself, you know, and tell you about my life. So that part of it was challenging for me.
Yeah. You know, I really relate to the breaking the cycle. I don't remember my father ever telling me that he loved me, and I know he did, but I think it was just his makeup in that generation. And my mom, who's 91, I don't remember her telling me that, and she doesn't say it to this day. And I know she does, but I am always telling my son I love him. Like, I hang up the phone when he leaves the room, when I see him, when he walks in. Like, I'm almost probably going too much the other way, but, like, I think it's really, I really relate to sort of breaking that cycle, even in little ways, like just saying something like that, you know?
Yeah, man, I think that's so important, and that's great of you because, you know, I mean, obviously, God forbid anything happen, but you know what I mean? We just live in such a volatile time. And on the positive side of it, you know, that's a, like an affirmation. That's going to give them confidence, you know? I think, when parents are, express their affection and their love for their children, they feel a sense of value, you know.
Yeah.
And I grew up with a lot of friends like you who, you know, from different cultures who, you know, my mom would say, "I love you, baby," and they would tell me, you know, we're like teenagers, and they're like, "Man, my mom doesn't say that." But obviously, to your point, like, you know, they do love you, but it was a thing, like, you know, some kids wish, you know, that they just said it.
Yeah, you know, Dad and I'm always telling him that I'm proud of him. And, you know, because, like, I think that they need that when they have a bad day or whatever, but they also need to know it all the time so that they have it in their subconscious so that they don't need to hear it if they are having a bad day. You know what I mean? Like, they can rely on that, okay, when all the shit hits the fan and nothing's going right, even subconsciously, I know that my parents are going to be proud of me regardless, so... Try to really work at that stuff, you know, because you get so busy, especially us in this business, and we're running around, and a lot of times it's so much about us as performers and stuff, and it's like, you have to really bend over backwards to be conscious of that this other person really needs to be formed, you know, as a person, as a man, or a girl, a woman. You know, as a key, you talk about writing, too, and you know, sort of reading up on your stuff, you said... something. You said, "I've been writing since I was a kid, short stories, poetry, all of that, and acting is such an extension of that, and it just came naturally." How is acting an extension of the writing, and what is it about writing, even when you were a kid, you know, and growing up in the city like that, like, what is it, what did writing do for you, what sparked in you, and how does it connect to acting?
Well, for me, writing, you know, when I was very young, it was an escape. My mom was an English teacher, so there's a lot of literature around the house. I was interested in things like, you know, poetry and music. And so for me, I felt like I had viewpoints on things, whether they were, you know, fictional or non-fictional.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just began to write, to get it out, and to express my imagination. And the acting, the reason why I say it was a natural extension of it is because when I'm writing these stories, and I mean, had I known that someone would have told me you should take this seriously, I probably would have been a screenwriter. You know, I was already into films and stuff like that. So I had my own stories and my own characters and my own, you know, and I'm an only child. And, you know, there was another urge to express it. And Sidney Poitier is my acting hero. And, you know, I would just watch his work and just, was inspired, like, wow, you know, I wanted to. And so all of it to me, you know, how the arts all go together. For me, you know, acting is in a sense an extension of writing because it has to be performed out. You know,
yeah, just like, and you're expressing. But I mean, the level of sort of just creative talent in you, you know, you went to LaGuardia High School, which for people out there not listening is just an unbelievable music and art, performing arts school. And then you toured with Queen Latifah as a backup singer when you were 17. You can sing, you can dance. You know, you're really a pain in the ass. You can do everything that I can't do. But anyway, but I mean, and also an athlete too. How did you decide to sort of make that decision? Because it seems like you could have been a serious athlete if you wanted to, too. What did the arts do for you that maybe sports didn't, or you know, vice versa?
The arts is my purpose, you know, and going to performing arts only affirmed that for me. Just to be amongst so many different, so many wildly talented kids, dancers, singers, artists, graphic art, you know, musicians. It was just an incredible, it was like magic, you know, and we had us, we were the actors, and it just felt, it was something I didn't have to think about, you know. Other things, you know, they always say, you know, like I tell my kids this, I'm like, find your passion, you know, and construct your life around that. I've been dreaming about what I do now since I was like 12 years old.
Yeah.
Like literally. And then I also tell them there's so many components to it though. Like, okay, you might want to be a singer, but learn how to play an instrument or learn what this is or learn what that is, because if it doesn't pan out for you being a singer, you can be a songwriter, you can be a producer.
I also think one art form or discipline informs the other. Like I do stand up, but I also act and I write, and I think I'm a better actor because of my stand-up. I'm more in the moment at times. I think I'm a better actor because of my stand-up, although they're two very different disciplines. As a stand-up, you actually have to bifurcate your mind and be listening to what's happening in the room and adjusting your material, but you can't do that as an actor. Obviously, you have to be in the moment in the scene. But I think all experiences, both in terms of your profession and what we do, and also in life, just makes you better, makes you more layered, makes you more an enriched person. You know, I think it's really important to try to have a lot of experiences like that. And, you know, otherwise you're just kind of a one note player, you know?
And I totally agree with you. And I think that especially in the arts, everything goes together. Like I can't tell you how many actors that I know that are really talented musicians, you know, or how many musicians that I know that
stand-up comics I know who play instruments? Like, it's crazy. Like, they're all really good and could probably be in bands and stuff. It's really the same thing. Yeah.
It is all the same thing.
If you're a kid of the 70s, you know, watching TV, there weren't a lot of black faces on TV, right? Like, I mean, and here you are and you break in and on major shows like ER and, like, was there any sort of sense in your head, because you obviously, we talked about slavery and you're very sensitive to the your culture and the culture at large, like, was there any sense that you had a sense of, like, responsibility or purpose or something to be a good representative on TV for black Americans or anything like that as an actor? Any pressure or anything like that?
No, not any pressure as far as that. I think I always want to... I just want to do great work, right? And sometimes, you know, it's not about that. But for me, it's the things that I'm attracted to. I do want to put forth positive imagery. And I touch on this in my book, actually, talking about, like, you know, when I was a kid, and it was just like, wow, you know, I used to watch, that's why I used to love Good Times, because it was like, wow, there's a father in the household. And then, then along came, you know, the Cosby Show. And, you know, aside from this stuff that's happening today, you know, that was the first time I saw a functional black family that was happy in life. I'm talking about was watching the Cosby Show. She was like, "Wow, you know." So now I'm dreaming.
You know, and it's funny because as a white, look, I'm a middle class kid like you, but we're white, and my father was around. I watched the Cosby Show from a completely different perspective. Is like, yeah, it just seems like a normal group of people who are a different color than me. Like that part of it didn't even right because I'm coming from a different place than you, but. That totally makes sense, that, especially in your case, being fatherless, like how much of a bigger impact it would have on you.
Yeah. I mean, it really, you know, that was like, man, and the brilliance of, I think, Cosby at that time was that it could have an effect on me coming from where I'm coming from the way it did, and it could have an effect on you coming from the way, you know what I mean? So it permeated throughout the whole country.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Well, listen, really great talking to you. The book is great, From Fatherless to Fatherhood. Everybody should read it. If you have a father, you don't, or if you're father or not, it's a really great book. Blu-ray of Traffic is out now, and really enjoy your work and big fan, and you're always real honest in your acting. So
really thank you, man. I really appreciate you, brother.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you, man.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll hopefully keep in touch and see you down the road. If you come to New York,
yes,
come
sir.
See my one-man show. It's pretty good.
I got you. Definitely.
All right, man. Be good. Take it easy.
All right, man.
All right, there you go. That's Omar Epps. Really cool guy. Seems like a great father, great actor. Super talented, too. It's really annoying, actually. Anyway, please come out, support the show, Broadway. Permission to speak with Paul Mercurio at the Jerry Orbach Theater, running tonight through August 22nd. And it'll be fun. We'll laugh, we'll cry, we'll slap each other in the face. I don't know what I'm talking about. All right. See you next week, everybody.